Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, July the 10th, and I am recording at 10:01 p.m., and that is British summertime here in amazingly sunny London. Well, at least it was earlier in the day. Okay, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. And I will try to do it in a quick summary version and then go back and take a slightly longer look at some of the other points. So let's see how it goes. Well, was this an exciting week or what? And, you know, I'm not even talking about Wimbledon, the Tour de France, or the cricket match here with England against Australia's dad's army. No, I'm talking about the stock markets. And boy, did we see some volatility. Well, you were promised a bit of volatility. And ended rather well, though. And I think the most interesting point overall here is that you go back to the think over the last few weeks, and also think over the last this week on Monday and Tuesday, even that there wasn't an investor anywhere in the world who wasn't talking about Brexit and also China's stock market collapse. Now, although put that in perspective, China's still got some decent gains on the year, but that's what they were talking about. 1939 allergies and all that sort of thing, which are usually contraindicators, as I've said before. So now China's stepped in and demonstrated that it's not a complete amateur, to put it mildly, in managing what actually happens in the stock market. They've certainly squeezed a lot of short positions, and they produced some dramatic upward dynamics, and I think we're going to see a continuation of that next week. And meanwhile, Europe, after all the tortures here of this Greek tragedy, looks like they are concluding a deal here, a bit of a political deal, I should say, to keep Greece in the EU. So those two preoccupations, it looks like, are going to move off center stage. Now, that's quite interesting, because that's occurring at a time when stock markets in the last couple of days have been rebounding from oversold positions, and they're still oversold, and they have a way to go. So don't be surprised if we get a sharp rally back up towards the previous highs, certainly in Europe, go back towards the March highs. In China, it'll be probably a little bit harder, but I do expect some significant gains there as well. And a report I read today is that 18 central banks are actively accommodative in terms of their monetary policies around world's major economies. So we have a favorable situation here for a good rally following a sharp correction, which also produced some cyclical bear markets of 20% plus in developing markets. Now, that type of volatility, I think we can expect it's not always going to be like this. We won't have every week isn't going to be like this week, fortunately. But I've talked about choppy activity, and I've also talked about the fact that we are in a seasonal period of underperformance from May through October. And so we're obviously not out of that yet. But again, I think it's, you know, for long-term investors who are in the market, who may manage their positions a bit, the time to sell is always when your positions are doing incredibly well and accelerating well above their 200-day moving averages. And the time to buy is when you get the panicky sell-offs, just as we've seen. I bought a little bit more here today. I bought that Euro Stoxx 50 index, but that'll be written up in my copy shortly. Okay, so much for that. And what looking further ahead in stock markets? Expect choppy years. We're getting a normalization of interest rates, and that will well we're no we're beginning to inch towards a normalization of interest rates. GDP growth is likely to pick up somewhat after being hammered by that long credit crisis, or that serious credit crisis recession, when I would say when I, after which I said it would take a good number of years before we would see GDP growth pick up again. But here we are, a little over 6 years following that 2009 first quarter 2009 trough, and I think that it's reasonable to expect GDP growth to start showing some signs of picking up, and not just in the USA. Okay. Moving on, what about Wall Street here? Well, it bounced. I should mention the stock markets. No, I'm gonna go through this, and I'll come back to these stock markets. Going on to government. Well, no, just to finish out one theme. Sorry about all this chopping and changing here, but my two-part to audio. I want to have something left to talk about in a longer version. I expect the next, as I've said before, the next 2 to 3 years, expect some choppy activity. We will, similar to what we've just experienced, that is nothing to panic over. And equities are the preferred investment class, and you can get some very good dividends. You don't want to pay up too much. But GDP growth will be picking up. But first, we still have accommodative monetary policy. Corporate profits, of course, are outperforming GDP growth thanks to corporate share buybacks and other, and they're benefiting from technology. They're benefiting from lower oil prices and lower energy prices, which are a byproduct of technology. They're benefiting from globalization. They're benefiting from the growth in middle classes around the globe. And those are the seeds of that secular bull market that I've been talking about. And we're going to see more of that 25 years from now. And we'll all be looking back. Well, I hope we'll still be around looking back and saying, well, that was a terrific secular bull market, wasn't it? And I've just given the reasons why it will be occurring. Okay, what about these global bond markets? Danger, danger, danger. That U.S. yield pushed back to 240 in here today. So bounce straight back up. As stock markets perform, those bond yields are going to go up. And I would be very careful there. I would get out. As a matter of fact, I think I said yesterday or on Wednesday that. I think it was Wednesday that, that sharp dip in the bond yields as people were panicking about markets. So that's time to get out of those bond positions because, of course, they're going to, those yields are going to go up when stock markets pick up. And that will be the case going forward for really quite a long time. I think there's a fair amount, I know there's a fair amount of complacency in those bond markets. And I congratulate those people for having done well for a number of years, but danger, danger, danger. Okay, currencies. Well, the US dollar has ended its secular bear market. Therefore, it's almost certainly in the early stages of a secular bull market. And one of the reasons why it's likely to experience a secular bull market is first because the dollar. Is very competitive. But also, the US is the technology leader and it's an energy leader, cheap energy in the USA relative to most other countries. And therefore, the dollar can rise for the next 10 to 20 years, but it, obviously not in a straight line. And it went up in a straight line so rapidly that it became quite overextended, was hitting corporate earnings, so going to fall back. Or at least, and also the Fed wants the dollar down. That's the only that that'll be. They won't mention it in all probability, but that'll be the main concern of Yellen now that, if I assume correctly, that Greece is no longer the, or Grexit is no longer the big threat that we were fearing it might be. And also, China is, it's not in some sort of massive depression environment, certainly not in my view at any rate. So I think we are on course for an interest rate hike, and will it occur in September with another in December? Quite possibly, although if they're very cautious, they'll pass on September. And commodity markets, well, technology has helped to keep those commodity markets down, and I think that as we as global GDP growth picks up, I would expect the industrial commodity prices to pick up somewhat. And I am not aware that there's ever been an equity bull market, at least not in the modern era. Just take that from, say, the beginning of the 20th century, when we've had a bull market in equities that did not end with or as the bull market was ending, that you get an explosive move to the upside by previously lagging commodity shares and commodity prices. Now, commodity shares and commodity prices are on their backs, so that obviously hasn't happened yet. No correlation goes on forever, but I still think there's a good chance that we will see that again. And meanwhile, I like these resources companies that have the big fat yields of 6 to 7%. And yes, of course, there's some risks in there, so get the good ones, which would be less risky. And in agricultural commodities, well, chances are, as I've been saying, that this crop season is not going to be as productive on average. My goodness, though, they're producing some spectacular fruit over here in Europe. I hope that's the case where you are. But we may have some upward pressure on food prices. Okay, that's the quick wrap on the big picture long-term outlook. So now I want to go back again to these stock markets, and starting with Asia. Which ones do we like the most? And I've got to favor the ones that are involved in really the QE. Japan is certainly still extremely attractive. I maintain that Japan is actually in its own secular bull market after a long, sharp secular bear market. They're doing all the right things, and valuations are still pretty attractive there. Confidence is gradually improving. And I'm always bemused by these people who look at Japan and say, "Well, confidence not good enough." And well, it doesn't happen overnight, does it? Not when you've had 20 years or so of a disinflationary, deflationary overall slump. But certainly corporate profits, corporate confidence rather, is improving. I think that's going to remain one of the most attractive markets. Don't pay up too much for it. Pick it up following the setbacks. And what sectors? Well, remember, Japan is a big tech player, and they're not as broadly diversified within the sector as the United States is, but I talk about a share that I own, FANUC. I think that's an extraordinary company, and Japan has other Toshiba, other good technology companies, and I would focus on those for the most part. But I think the whole Japanese stock market is going to be an above average performer for many, many years to go, and certainly as long as that QE is taking place, and it's taking place in a big way, and we're getting shifting out of JGBs, the Japanese government bonds, and into equities, and that will be driving up the stock market as well. China, well, China's scary, isn't it? And it's scary at a number of different levels. I'm glad I don't live there, although it's a very exciting place to visit if you can stay out of the polluted areas, which is not easy, where the air is not so bad. It'll be even nicer to visit 20 years from 20 years from now. But this is still a fast-growing economy, despite their transition, despite the slowdown that we're seeing overall. And China right now has got a very accommodative monetary policy, and that's good for the stock market. But this has long been a very volatile market, and that's what we should expect, more volatility from China. So when it's top of the pops, when it's doing spectacularly well, that's a time perhaps to reduce positions. I haven't been very good at doing that myself, but that if you're not just a buy and long-term buy and hold investor, it is sensible to lighten. I have done that from time to time. Lighten up on the really strong rallies and increase following the very sharp setbacks, as I did yesterday, as you might have seen. Okay, India also, the Narendra Modi phenomenon, and I like that market. When China's doing particularly well, India tends to take a little bit of a back seat, and vice versa. But I think if you take you look at the Asia Pacific region, if you want a diversified portfolio, as I would recommend, Japan, China, India, in no particular order there. Japan will probably be less volatile, being in the developed market economy, and possibly Vietnam among the frontier markets. So I think those are the most attractive overall. What about New Zealand and Australia? Well, I like those two markets. Australia is going through a difficult period. I think we need to get into the resources recovery phase here to make that. And I think Australia will do very well when we do. Ditto New Zealand, and New Zealand has had a pretty good run anyway. Let's go on to the European markets here. Getting Greece back in on this deal to avoid Grexit, well, you could call it a political triumph of sorts. That's what they wanted to do, at any rate, and so they've succeeded. That's even what the Greeks wanted to do. But has that resolved Greeks' problems? Of course not. And they're pretty expensive. I remain concerned about the lack of really good growth in the EU because of their sort of socialist policies. The single currency does not help the GDP growth, and too big a and too expensive a bureaucracy there. Lots of rule making going on. Economists aren't in charge. I'd love to see, a European economy booming, but that certainly hasn't been the case for a long time. It's improving now, and also it's going to benefit from Mario Draghi's monetary policies. That 60 billion coming in a month for the lengthy medium term. But it's frightening. You look over the last 15 years, and the European region, its percentage of GDP growth has really, really slowed, shrunk, I should say, relative to Asia's contribution and also the rest of the Western contribution led by the United States. So they need more pro-growth policies, less bureaucracy. They need the whole package. What about this UK referendum? I see no reason at present why I should vote for the UK to stay in the EU. I mean, mind you, I like the idea. I love traveling around Europe. I like European culture. I like all the variety. I love the food. It's a wonderful place. But I don't want the UK shelling out in a Europe which envies the UK's financial sector dominance and really has proved to be a big headwind in terms of UK growth. So, well, I've already said it. If that referendum, a UK referendum, yes, that in-out referendum, were to occur tomorrow, I'd be out. Let's see how things change in the negotiations and build up going forward. But well, we'll see. I've said enough on that. The USA, it's sort of an underperforming market here in US dollar terms. I'm going to look at them all in US dollar terms. Underperforming Europe, even for the most for the most part. Partly because it did pretty well earlier on, partly because the US dollar is too strong and that has been hurting corporate profits overall. Partly because the oil shakeout, which is a big blessing for countries that don't produce much oil and therefore have to import it all, that's hurt the US here a little bit, and that's factored in to what we actually see. And then I think also that there are no doubt some commendable qualities to President Obama and his administration, but it's not an economic administration, is it? And I don't know when we're going to get back to a good White House-led economic administration in the U.S., which would certainly kick GDP growth into a higher gear. Obviously, it's going to happen at some time, but these Republicans now declare my position on this. I'm a social liberal and a fiscal conservative. So I strongly favor social tolerance. I'm very glad that the U.S. Supreme Court finally approved gay marriage. I mean, it's ridiculous, all the prejudices and biases and so on. But I don't want to go on about that. I won't go on about that too much. And I don't think I've mentioned it at all previously. But these Republicans, they're not going to get elected. People like Jeb Bush, he's kind of taking a hard line social view because that's the only way you can get nominated in the Republican Party. Well, he's already kissed goodbye to the presidential election, in my opinion. And that's happened to Romney, who is I think quite a tolerant guy on this. Bush maybe as well. I don't know, but I know what he said, and I couldn't vote for him, even though I want sort of Republican economic policies for the most part. So I don't know. I think the Clintons would be smarter in terms of economic policy, but also overall, than most Democrats, I should say. Clintons be smarter than most Democrats. They won't be entirely redistributive, in other words. But what I ought to also touch on is that Wall Street usually does pretty well in the run-up to a presidential election, statistically. And it's not 100% sure, but on average, it does pretty well. And I think that will happen again. You know, it's the old tendency, they clean out the Augean stables in the first 2 years of an administration and then gun it up to try to win the next election in the last two years. So that's a favorable tailwind here for that US stock market. I've already talked about bonds. There's not a whole lot else to say, but I wouldn't touch the sector. I would be right out. I don't see why anybody has to be in there, and I don't buy into this policy of where you have a certain fixed percentage in bonds and a certain fixed percentage in equities. That's just my view, but I don't have any bonds, and I have no intention of buying any bonds. Probably won't buy any bonds for the rest of my life. I might. There are certain circumstances when I have in the past held corporate bonds, and might do so again, but not in this environment, not with these interest rates. You got great yields in equities, better yields in equities than in the bond markets. So, what about the currencies? Well, I think I've touched on that and saying we thought we'd see the US dollar get a what it's I think it's seen the first upward leg of a secular bull market, which coincided with the ending of its secular bear market. I've described the dollar as having run up on that dollar index. That's an easier one to just if we just talk about it in one context. Having seen that run up to 100, that's an important peak, and I've maintained for since then that we're likely to see a very lengthy reaction and consolidation phase for the rest of this year. And that's what we're seeing so far. But I hope it ranges a bit lower because that would be better for U.S. corporate profits. Certainly, the Fed would wants to engineer it lower if possible. And if there's less sort of panic and fear in the rest of the world generally, then that will help to remove some upward pressure on the U.S. dollar. And what about other currencies? Well, these commodity currencies have taken a hammering, but they will improve as global GDP growth improves overall. I don't know how long India and China can hold in steady against the US dollar. But because again, they're both developing economies, and they tend to have periods of softer currencies overall. So I think the dollar is very likely 10 or 20 years from now to have had the to receive the best moves to the upside. Are there any basket case currencies? Well, where you've got, the Russian ruble, where you have really badly managed economies. That applies to Russia as well, although it has enormous potential under an different administration. I think the euro, a lot of people have been talking about a collapse of the euro. It's at 111, 1.1162 here today. Now, I don't think the euro will collapse. And if Europe gets its economic act together, it'll be a reasonably firm currency. At the moment, it hasn't got its economic act together, but GDP growth is likely to improve somewhat. That will offer some support there for the euro. Sterling, I think the challenge will be to prevent sterling from moving up too much against the euro. And I don't know. Let's see. I've already mentioned the Australian dollar. Let's go on to these commodities. Now, the agricultural commodities, it's in the hands of the weather gods. They are mostly starting from a low base area, but I assume some upward pressure. Metals, very depressed. That's good for many economies in that it means that inflationary pressures are certainly not a problem. Technology has enabled the top miners to produce very, very efficiently and effectively to keep these prices down. But I think that, well, put it this way, you won't see a period of synchronized global economic growth without a good run to the upside by industrial commodities. Now we're nowhere near that synchronized economic growth, although I do feel that, over 6 years after the most severe credit crisis recession since the 1930s, that we are likely to see global GDP growth pick up somewhat erratically over the next 2 to 3 years. I think that will actually occur, and as and when it does, then I think that will help to support those industrial metals. But again, technology is a big factor here, helping to keep those down, and then you're going to get substitution for some of these, including oil. And I maintain, we'll never see oil back up. That peak at what was it at 142? It depends whether you're looking at Brent or the WTI back in 2008. That's history. We're not going to see that again. And I think that's very important. It's a very big bull factor here for global GDP growth, provided you're not a primarily oil producer. Competition from all these different energy technologies, that's going to continue. It was outrageously expensive at first, and now prices are coming down, and I think prices for those alternative energies will only come down over the next 10 or 20 years. That'll be good for global GDP growth. I think that pretty much covers it overall. I hope so. And if not, let me have some feedback on the audio. We'll have feedback either way if you're ever inclined. I'm always interested to hear your views. And just have a fantastic and hopefully relaxing weekend. All the very best.